from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Newly minted best-selling author Mireille Giuliano has a new lifestyle for American women, their waistlines, and their state of mind. Forget about Dr. Atkins and the zone, she says, and start to think French. Her Parisian philosophy, captured in her new book, French Women Don't Get Fat, is taking bestseller lists in overweight, overstressed America by storm. Bush, Washington may growl at Paris, but chubby Americans are reaching for the secret of how to eat well and stay slim French style, buying leafy green leeks, making homemade yogurt, and learning to savor food, even the occasional croissant, without guilt. It's not a bowl of Special K that will do it, says Mireille Giuliano. It's a state of mind. Tonight on Point, Culture Talk and the French Woman's Secret of Svelte. You can join the conversation. Have you figured out the French paradox, eating well and staying thin? Could the answer to America's waistline battle be not calories, but culture? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from San Francisco is Mireille Giuliano. She first came to America as a high school exchange student and gained 20 pounds in a flash. Back home in France, her family said, no, this is not the way. Her new book is French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure. Mireille Giuliano, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you. So you're an unusual hybrid, kind of French, very much so, and kind of American. And it all began when you were a teenager. What was it that brought you to the United States?
Well, I came to Western Mass, actually, as an exchange student.
Just outside of Boston.
Exactly. And in a beautiful little town. And went totally off track with my eating pattern because I discovered ice cream and brownies and chocolate chip cookies and having a sweet tooth. And
welcome
no
to the USA. Right. And no mother there to shake her finger.
No mother there to tell me no snacks outside the meal. I started eating, you know, number of meals a day, lots of snacks and all kind of food, junk and otherwise, and without thinking about it and without sitting down to eat, just always eating, standing up and watching TV. And
it had its effect.
It did, and it wasn't pretty.
When you stepped off the SS Rotterdam when you got back to France at the end of that year, your father saw you coming down the gangplank, and his first mm-hmm. words to his French daughter returned from America?
Tu ressembles à un sac de patates, which is the most insulting thing a father can say to his daughter.
You look like a sack of potatoes.
Uh-huh, the big one.
Welcome home, sweetheart. And this was a father who loved you.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to that was a trauma, we read, in your young
yes.
life that has shaped a lot, a remarkable amount since then in mm-hmm. the way you live and eat and got your life tied back into the sort of French culture. We want to hear that, but I guess I want to understand who it is we're talking to, want our listeners to understand. Your life since then has gravitated toward America. These days, you live what, most of the year in the United States, mm-hmm. part of the year in France.
In New York, yes.
You married an American.
Yes, and I go back to France for my work 1 week every 2 months or so. And so I've been observing both my French friends and my American friends the last 30 years.
And your work is interesting. You started as a UN translator, then
yes.
worked for the French government promoting French mm-hmm. food and mm-hmm. wine, and then got involved with the makers of Veuve Clicquot, the big
yes.
champagne-making company,
mm-hmm.
opened its
mm-hmm.
American subsidiary.
Exactly.
So and you sell champagne and wine to Americans now.
Yes.
All right. We've got you pegged. We've got you pegged. So there you are. You're kind of bicultural. You came home looking like a sack of potatoes, and you had to figure out what to do about it. We're going to hear your prescription, the prescription you learned there. But I've got to ask you first, this book, French Women Don't Get Fat, has rocketed up the bestseller lists. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place. Everybody's talking about it now. And this, though, in a time when France has taken some real rude blows from the United States, when it's been a very unpopular, the U.S. and France fell out over the war in Iraq and a lot else. We had all kinds of slurs being tossed in the way of France, cheese-eating monkeys and all the rest. What do you make of the fact, Mireille Giuliano, that at the same time that there's been that kind of tension in the air, Americans appear very willing to run out, buy your book, and learn all things French to lose a few pounds? Well, how does that paradox sit?
Well, I think, you know, from my experience talking to Americans all over the country, I mean, obviously they are smart enough to know that, you know, government and politics don't mix with culture and history and food and love of a country. And frankly, if there's one example to show you that it has nothing to do with it, at a time where the relationship with France and the U.S. was not the best, you know, the last year and so, the sales of Veuve Clicquot went up 15% in the U.S. So it shows and proves that, you know, the cake is in the pudding.
And the actually, champagne is in the glass.
Exactly. And it goes beyond that. And, you know, it's, I mean, French people don't agree with the government and Americans don't agree with the government. And there's not much we can control over it. And things, you know, hopefully will get better. And I hope that my little book will is raising up a storm in France where all the press is writing about this French woman who is writing this book and, you know, giving the secrets away of French lifestyles to the world.
Right. Okay. I've got to ask you then. First of all, let's just go to the central premise, which is that French women are not fat. Now, is that true? It's been a couple of years since I've been in Paris.
We read
that fast food is a big seller there, that your McDonald's are very profitable and well-attended. And that obesity itself may be a growing issue in France. Is it still the case that French women aren't fat?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously there are French women who are fat, like there are women who are fat in every country. But basically, if you look at all the developed world, you know, obviously America is the worst and England is pretty bad. And countries like Holland and Germany, where I was last fall to launch the book, are pretty bad. And France is still by far the lowest. But, you know, it's 21st century. And with the globalization, the fast food, the bad habits, it's catching up. The big difference, though, is that, you know, in the U.S. this has been going on for over 20 years and only crazy diets were the key to, you know, trying to solve that problem and didn't solve anything, made it worse. Whereas in France, we're reacting pretty fast. Now, a lot of things are happening in the schools. Vending machines are forbidden. There are programs in the cafeterias to teach young kids what to eat and how to eat because, you know, the mother works or the grandmother is not around and the lifestyle has changed. But I'm pleased to see when I go there that you know, they're not accepting this easily. And with our rituals and our culture about eating and gastronomy, we are reacting. So hopefully, you know, more people will react. And I think as studies come out that diets are very bad for you and diets don't solve the problem and diets actually do a lot of harm because when you diet, you deprive yourself of things that have good nutrients and that are good for you, whether it's bread with fiber or chocolate with the good fats and things like that.
And right
so
there,
my book is just coming, you know, at the perfect timing because people want to have some other choice. And the French style, by essence, is not about dieting. It's not about deprivation. It's about learning how to manage and gratify your appetite through a very simple system of fooling yourself and using your head and looking more at food in a different way that Americans do. That is, enjoying food, eating for pleasure, eating with your senses, as opposed to being obsessed with food, talking about it constantly, being negative, feeling guilty, feeling it sinful. I mean, how can something be sinfully delicious, you know?
ask the Puritans. Right? They probably had an idea. So you have these two pillars, sort of self-deception and sensuality, that is, really enjoy the food when you eat it. That part is maybe easier to understand. Self-deception, I suppose Americans engage in it all the time when it comes to their dieting plans. But what do you mean by self-deception?
Yes. Well, you know, in this little system of tricks and tips I give, I don't, first of all, I don't say, you know, do this, don't do that, eat this, don't eat that. Because, again, that is prescriptive and that is, you know, that is in a formula that says one size fits all. Well, each of us is very unique. We are all, you know, great individuals with different needs, with different habits, with different desires, with different likes and dislikes in terms of food. And so each person has to do that little, what I call the reality check and the conversation with oneself. And it starts by a food diary, but not a food diary a la Weight Watcher when you just write your food down. A food diary where for a couple of weeks you're going to write what you eat, where you eat, how you eat, why you eat, and how much you eat.
That doesn't sound like self-deception. That sounds like painful candor.
No. It's necessary at the very beginning. It's the only exercise you have to do. And then when you will see, and you know, you will see a clear pattern of what you do to yourself. And then you're going to have to eat the French way, and that is to have 3 meals a day, to start reducing, but gradually, not going from, you know, if you have a loaf of bread, not going from a loaf to no bread.
Okay, hold the system, if you will, Madame Giuliano. Mm-hmm. We're going to come back and hear a lot about it and about the cultural surround that you say makes it possible. We're talking tonight about French women, their lifestyles, their waistlines. My guest is the author of the newly best-selling French Women Don't Get Fat. You can join the conversation. How is it that French women eat all that French food and still manage to be so slim? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Un peu de son déjeuner, au moineau des Tuileries. Elle fredonne, elle sourit. Et voilà Mademoiselle de Paris.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about French women, their lifestyles and their waistlines, about French food and eating well without getting fat.
Bœuf bourguignon, French beef stew in red wine. We're going to serve it with braised onions and mushrooms and a wine dark sauce. It's a perfectly delicious dish.
And that was Julia Child on The French Chef for many years. Mm-hmm. Many Americans' introduction to French cooking. My guest tonight, you can hear her joining me from San Francisco, Mireille Giuliano, author of French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure. We're going to hear a lot in this hour. You can join us, too. Have you traveled abroad, maybe to France, then come home in dismay at the scale of Americans these days? And what is it the French know that Americans don't? Have you bought the book? Are you making leek soup and eating like a French woman? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. All right, Mireille Giuliano, we don't want to keep the system a secret for too long here, but I have to ask you one question before we get into a bit more of the nuts and bolts of this. You're writing this as a path for women to follow. Why women in particular? Why not men and women?
Well, because, you know, most diet books, ironically, are written by men, and I couldn't write a book about men, but I've spoken with a lot of women. I know a lot of women, both in France and in the U.S., and I know the issues they have.
But it sounds like a French notion to begin with, that men and women and their waistlines are different issues, and maybe rightly so. But are you saying this would not work for men? You're not offering this to men?
No, it does. Ironically, there are many men who have bought the book and have written to me and saying, mm-hmm. you know, I'm doing this too. And, well, my husband is a good example. And he's the same way that he was when he finished graduate school.
The same way.
So he brags mm-hmm. about, yes. And he learned these tricks in the book and with me. And, you know, he's finally admitted it.
But you really do write it from a women's I view. We'll have to come back and talk for a bit about how French men.
Well, it's because you know it's again. You write about what you know,
yeah.
I haven't exactly discussed weight or diets with men, but with my American women friends, you know, the reason I wrote the book is when the last 15 years lecturing on food and wine, they would always ask me, well, you know, you're passionate about food and wine, and we see you eat in restaurant, we see you featured in magazine, how you entertain in your home. in your home in Paris, in New York, and how come you're not fat? And, you know, French women don't exactly tell their life to strangers, and I would sort of have this French shrug and said, well, you know, French women don't get fat.
A little reticence
and,
there.
And the next time they would say, well, you know, what do they do? And I said, well, we have, you know, all kinds of little tricks and tips. And, you know, they would say, well, you should write a book. And I never wanted to write a book. And the last few years, I changed my mind. And I thought that there was a message to get across and that I should share some of our secrets with my friends, not only in America, but in other countries as well.
Now, we want to hear them and then put them in a context of a cultural context. I mean, you ask, on the one, it sounds absolutely wonderful on the one hand. On the other, it sounds like something that may be difficult for Americans in an American mindset or American lifestyle to pull off. We'll get some of it out here on the table. But I'm just laughing as I read in the New York Times this week. They're saying, after reading your book, you know, French women are never too busy to go food shopping several times a week or to make their own yogurt from scratch, never too cash-strapped to buy farm-fresh items from open-air markets. They never eat in front of the television or standing up. They eat slowly, savor every bite, making dining a ritual. It can sound out of reach in some American lifestyles, but give us a sense. Take us into the heart of it. What are you suggesting here?
I suggest that, you know, once you've read the book, you will know that function of your lifestyle and your working habits and your personal life and your desires and your likes and dislikes, you can pick and start with slowly. I mean, everything is slow. Don't do extremes, because extremes don't work. And don't go from, you know, eating a pint of ice cream to not eating ice cream. But reduce slowly and learn a few of the basic tricks. And one of them, the major difference between American and French women, one of them, for example, is that we drink like 3 times more water than they do.
Even today, when every other person's carrying a water bottle around on their belt.
Yeah, but you see, it's interesting. They do, but they sip water. This is not drinking water. And I mean, drinking water is a big glass of water, like 8, 10, 12 times a day.
Really pack it down.
Because every time you drink water, you set your metabolism in motion and you lose some calories. So this is very good for you. And you should always start your day with that. Before the OJ, before any breakfast, your body has been dehydrated during the night. And especially for women, it's very important to have enough water in your system. Plus water, you know, has no calorie. It flushes your toxins. And it's really, really the essence of life. Learn to like water. And the next thing is yogurt, because, you know, we don't drink raw milk, but we have a lot of milk through cooked dishes, from flan to custard to creme caramel to things like yogurt. And we eat a lot of yogurt. But, I mean, the real good yogurt that is still hard to find in America.
You don't mean the supermarket that, style that sort of all tastes like pudding or dessert, the super sweet.
Well, the one that, you know, that has artificial flavor and corn syrup and, I don't know, all these what I call poison food in there. That's not the real thing. And that's why I recommend that you make your own, first of all, because it's very easy, it's very cheap. The machine does it for you. You get 8 wonderful yogurt for the price of 1 in the supermarket. And all you have to do is boil your milk and put some starter and then put it in the pot and plug it in.
But why does it make you thin
and not
fat?
So it's a great investment.
Why does it make you slim and not fat eating that yogurt?
Well, because, you know, it's something you will have for breakfast, let's say after a night where you had a big meal in a restaurant. You're not going to have croissant the next day. You see, French women don't talk about it, but we all do it, you know. Last Sunday I was in Paris and my friends gave a huge dinner, you know, from 7 o'clock to midnight, and we had, you know, champagne and red wine and bread and dessert and a cheese course. Well, guess what? The next morning, I'll bet you out of these 10 women, none of us had anything but, you know, a yogurt.
And that's huge. You're saying that there's this constant kind of keeping track and balancing going. You call it natural balancing. Eat big tonight, eat small tomorrow.
Yeah. And at the beginning, it's an exercise, but once you get used to it, you know, I don't think about it. It's automatic, because you look more at a weekly basis, and you constantly, I mean, life is compromise, you know, but you don't deprive yourself. You just say, okay, yesterday I overindulged, now today I'm going to pay a little bit for it, but I'm not going to starve myself and skip breakfast. I'll just have something, you know, less fattening than pain au chocolat.
Right. You describe, it's a funny scene, an American friend in Paris at a wonderful restaurant by the Seine, and I guess she and her companion look across at a table of two French women having lunch, and they're very trim, and they're expecting them just to sip on Perrier water or something. Instead, these French women order, I don't know, a three-course meal, and they've got
the dessert
and whole works. And wine. And the Americans' jaws are dropping. How do they do that? You're saying that's only part of the show. The other part is some balancing off that may happen tomorrow or tonight.
Yes, yes. But the Americans think that it's their DNA, you know. It's like, well, it's genetic. It's not, you know, and I'm a good proof of that. I was normal when I came to the DS. And at the end of the day, if you eat more than you burn, you're going to gain weight. It's that simple.
You're 5'3 and 112 pounds, but when you came back from the States, you must have been more like 130, 140.
Well, I was 20 pounds heavier, and then, you know, the first 3 months in Paris, because when you do that, you get in a vicious circle, I gain another 10.
Right.
So I really looked like a huge bag of potatoes.
So, and the other piece is, the big piece here seems to be putting a lot of energy into making the food, into not just eating it, but preparing it, treating it.
Well,
it's almost
a
sacrament, as I read it.
You see it as energy, and I know that's also a major difference between American women or French women. They said, oh, you know, I don't have the time, and they see cooking as a chore, and you have to shop, and you have to cook. But for us, cooking is a sensual act. You cook for the people you love, whether your spouse, your children, your friends. And I'm not saying that you have to cook every night, because we're all busy today, whether here or in France. But try to cook on the weekend, and try to cook once during the week, and prepare a meal. And you don't have to make, you know, a 7-hour preparation meal. And on purpose, in my book, I have very easy recipes. Most of the recipes you can do within half an hour. They only require a couple of ingredients, and it's good food. And you're going to discover, you know, what really good food tastes like. And I guarantee you, once you eat that, you don't want to eat the processed food or the prepared food that is full with all kinds of bad stuff.
There's such a cultural backdrop to this, and I've got to ask you about motivation and how you see American women's motivation around eating and weight compared with French women's. As I read your book, Marie Giuliano, there's a lot of attention here to the sensuality, even to the seduction, part of it so you can fit into the clothes you want to wear, but no small part of it about the men. And,
yes,
and that sort of driving the French woman's
want to please
vigilance,
our men.
Right, to please them. Are American women equally attuned to that, or are they kind of liberated from that pressure in some degree and therefore less motivated along the line that you're motivated? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think that's true. But again, it's a question of changing your lifestyle, because it's more than just, you know, finding your balance with your eating pattern. Because once you feel bien dans sa peau, you know, comfortable and
with
within your skin, it has all kinds of repercussions. You are a happier person. You are more energetic. You're more dynamic. You are more open to other people. You are more patient. You have a better worker life, a better personal life. And all together, you have what we French call la joie de vivre, and which has no equivalent in the English language. But you can learn these things. I mean, they're not, you know, brain surgery.
And seduction being no small part of the motivation. Marie Giuliano, stand by. I want to begin to bring our callers in. A lot of them want to join the conversation. Marie Giuliano's new book is French Women Don't Get Fat, and it's selling like, I guess hotcakes is the wrong thing. It's selling like leeks. Leek soup has an important role here. Catherine's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Catherine. You're on the air.
Hi. Mireille, bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. This is what I want to say. I am French myself, much like you. I came here in my 20s, and I love the States, and I'm still French, though.
Okay.
culture-wise. So I have a couple of things. I haven't read your book yet, but I intend on getting it. I worked for many years in this country for this chain of natural food bread and circus or whole food market. mm-hmm. which is a marvelous place in the States to get good food. And
yes.
I remember working in the nutrition aisle, and one of the things that flew off the shelves was called grapeseed extract.
And what's that for, Catherine?
It's for thinning out.
It reduces appetite or something?
It breaks down the fats.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I kept telling my customers, I was raised much like a lot of French people, eating a four-course meal, well-balanced, a meat or a fish, a salad, a cheese, and a fruit, and sipping lovely wines all mm-hmm. the while. And my sense, I don't know what Mireille thinks about this, is that wine actually has a very beneficial influence on breaking down the fats in a meal.
So the wine piece, not just for the heart, but for breaking it down. How about it, Marie Giuliano?
Yeah, well, you know, that's why we have wine with meals. And people don't understand. Sometimes at lunchtime, they tell me, can you have a glass of wine and you can go back to work? And I said, well, you know, first of all, for us, we don't separate wine for food. Wine is food. And so with a meal, it's a great complement. It's an antioxidant. It has a lot of nutrients. It's very good for you, and it burns the fat.
And so every dinner, every lunch, how does it factor into your, I won't call it a diet, you don't like that word, how does it factor into
no.
your system?
Well, you know, I am petite. I certainly couldn't drink a bottle of wine. And it's the same for wine as it is for food. You don't need a bottle. A glass is fine. You know, I had lunch today with someone, and we had a glass of Veuve Clicquot, of course. But you know, two-course meal. And it was lovely. And I wouldn't enjoy my meal without a glass of wine. Yeah. It's just like something very important is missing.
There it is, and maybe part of staying thin as well. Alicia's calling from Goldsboro.
But on the other hand, you know, you don't want to do what many Americans do, and that, you know, go for drinks and have three glasses of Chardonnay and no food. Wine must always be with food. Do not drink wine by itself.
It's not to be drinking, it's to be dining.
No, you won't see French women just sipping, you know, glasses of wine just sitting there.
Well, you will see Americans doing that. Alicia, in North Carolina, Goldsboro, join us. You're there.
Hi, yes.
Hi.
Well, I just have a comment. I've been in Europe a lot and in America, and I've seen a lot of French women, while they're eating, they smoke a lot. And they smoke, I mean, when they're walking down the street, all the time. And I don't know if that contributes a little bit to them being slender.
It is a good question, because I didn't know that, but one journalist who thought it was the reason why French women were not fat called the Cancer Society, and they actually have all these statistics, and actually there are not that many more French women than American women who smoke. So it's not the reason, and I can tell you among my friends, most of them don't smoke, and the ones who smoke, you know, smoke like a couple of cigarettes a day, but and they're all in good shape. So,
but doesn't it feel different to you?
It's a bad excuse.
when you visit Paris, I mean, I know when I've been there, it sure feels different.
Yes,
it feels like there's a lot more smoking going on.
Exactly, but you know, it will get there. January 1st, it was applied in Italy, and they've embraced it. And I think it's just a matter of a year or two, and it will get there. Now there are already lots of places in office where you can't smoke. It's fortunately, it's going to happen.
So smoking may be going out, though. Alicia's seen the weed may be helping with appetite. You're saying it's on its way out, though. I'm interested in the book. You say, when it comes to another thing very common in the American sense of losing weight, you say the gym holds very little appeal to French women. Dressing to break a sweat doesn't go with being French. What do you mean by that?
Well, because, you know, we get our exercise from walking. We walk a lot, and actually walking, like drinking water, is easy, simple, inexpensive. You can do it when you want, where you want, in your street clothes. And it does wonderful things from your waist down. And we walk incredible. And many of my American friends who come and visit me in Paris, you know, come for a week and we eat three meals a day. And they said, well, I eat more than I do in America and I'm losing weight. And it's because we walk everywhere and we climb the stairs. You just, you know, have to move your butt. I mean, that's essential, because today most of us, we sit all day, whether it's at the desk or in the car or in the subway, in the bus. And We don't need to eat like our grandparents were working on the farm. And walking is just a marvelous exercise. Now, if you like to go to gym, by all means, go to the gym. You know, the main thing is to really exercise.
That is walk. That is the old French wisdom, move your butt. Marie Giuliano, stand by. We've got to take a short break here. The new book is French Women Don't Get Fat. You can join our conversation. Is this the miracle cure or just a fancy French spin on the American weight problem? Do you want to look like a French woman? And how is it that we fume at the French but still swoon over the culture? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about French women, their lifestyles, and their waistlines. My guest is Mireille Giuliano, author of the new book, French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure. You can join us tonight. Is America's weight problem a cultural problem? How would you define it? And are you ready to take the French cure? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Esther is calling from Traverse City, Michigan. Hi, Esther. You're on the air.
Hello, good evening to everyone.
Good evening.
I have an interesting experience to share with you. I spent about a year and a half in Brazil. I've also been to France several times, but I was in Brazil, and while I was there eating as much as I could among the Brazilian population, I lost 40 pounds.
40 pounds? Were you doing the samba all night every night?
Well, I was dancing a little bit, yeah, but I really was just eating rice and beans and meat, just like what the people eat there. I admit I was living on the top of a mountain, so I did have a little more exercise than driving around in a car. But just listening to the program, I do think that the American culture and the way that we our food industry works, it's really hard to eat healthy and to be healthy and in shape.
So just living differently in Brazil without trying, you lost 40 pounds. You're clearly back in the States now. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I've noticed a lot of really interesting things about just excess. I feel like when I was in Brazil, I lost my excess. And I wasn't even that overweight to begin with, but I got down to about a size 2, and that was amazing. I never thought I would be, my body completely changed. And coming back to the States, I've noticed that, as opposed to in Brazil, where we really did eat as much as we could, here, food spoils. But, before you can eat it, our bread molds, before we have time to eat it all. So, we just have so much in the United States, and in Brazil, people they eat as much as they can, and they still are in amazing shape.
It's wild to see. Esther, thanks for calling in with that. Mary Giuliano, do you think women have to carve out a kind of cultural island in the United States to follow the advice you're giving, or to have the results that Esther found just being in Brazil? Can you live in the American mainstream and pull this off?
Yeah. I think you can now, because more and more, people are becoming more aware of all the garbage that's out there. I mean, there's quantity, but you have to look for quality. And, less is more. And when you eat quality food and you eat more slowly and you take the time and you stop worrying about the bad things you eat and you think about the good things to eat, you're going to make some progress. And, take it slowly, one, two, three things at a time, and it would make a difference. And, the proof is already with all the amazing email I get of people who have made a change in a few weeks and can believe that they're melting down and really not depriving themselves.
Breaking out of a kind of cycle there. Virginia's calling from Bear Lake, Michigan. Hi, Virginia. You're on the air.
Oh, bonsoir.
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 Enchanté. It's wonderful to hear you speak and to hear you recollect all the wonderful things about French cooking in Paris. I've been to France and Paris 8 times in the last 17 years.
Mm.
And back to the wine, as you may know, red wine, also the grapes also have something that is very good for protecting against cancer. In fact, there's a product out that comes in concentrated pill form, which is the red grapes from wine. And as far as losing weight, running around Paris and up and down stairs at the metro and and the wonderful little grocery stores. I have a favorite little hotel off the Boulevard Saint-Michel where I stay, and there's a little grocery around the corner where you can run over and get cheese and wine. And
do you come back thinner or heavier after that cheese and wine, Virginia?
That's the most important part. I always come back 5 to 10 pounds lighter.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great story. Thanks for sharing your experience there. Let's get another call here. Paul is calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation, and I'm interested in the whole idea of having so much joy and kind of taking your time and really celebrating a meal with friends and how that connects with staying healthy and perhaps staying trimmer. And then the second point is I would love to hear Marie comment on French men. And are French men necessarily any trimmer? I never had that impression, but are they equally as trim as the women?
Oh, good. Let's go to the men first. Thanks, Paul, for your call. Marie, Giuliano, what about French men?
I would say, you know, I mean, I work in a men's world in my field, and I can't think about anyone in my company who's overweight.
Do they have the same little tricks as French women do? Do they, you know, balance off, do the same ritual food preparation, the enjoy it today and lose it tomorrow?
Yeah, and they are also very interested in cooking and talking about food. Just recently when we were in end of the summer, we were in Provence in a little restaurant where there were only French, like 10 tables and all French people. And at some point during the meal, my husband said to me, I can't believe this. He said, every table is talking about food. And they were exchanging recipes and talking about the meal they had prepared. It's really a very big part of our culture, you know, because food with love and security are basic needs, and so we think about it a lot. We take the time, and you know, eating at the table is a great place to connect. I mean, last night at Aqua in San Francisco, we had a dinner, and the whole restaurant, we had a special dinner for the launch of my little book. And there were people there, we didn't know each other, and at the end of the four-hour meal, they were all friends. You know, so this is very important.
Four-hour meal, you've got some time to make friends.
Yes, but it's a time, you know, it's a place to socialize. The kitchen, the table is a very, very important element in French life. And that's why when you take the time and you eat slowly and you talk in between, you eat less and you enjoy the food and you savor it. And you lose weight because your taste buds would be satisfied after a few bites of every dish. So you don't need to eat piles of food.
The other elements you bring in here, not all in the kitchen or the dining room, sex, love, and laughter, all ingredients in your system. How do they factor in?
Well, I mean, you know, again, if you feel good about yourself, you tend to be a happier person. And laughing is a very, very important part of when we get together. You know, I mean, we really laugh a lot, whether it's with my family or friends. And it has, you know, great effect on you when you laugh. I mean, people don't laugh enough. People take themselves or their life too seriously and don't take the time to just, you know, have good laughs. Love is the same thing. You know, they're too busy working and multitasking. And, you know, to have a great love life, you like in food, you have to make compromise. You have to first know yourself well and know your needs and your desire. And then you can be a better lover, a better mistress, a better wife, a better husband and all that. So it all goes together. It's really a full circle.
Well, that's a French circle, all right. I've got to ask you about one thing. You're talking about the waistline here, but then I read you saying recently that with your business success, everything you've done, even the book, you say, I could never have done all this in France. France is a class society. They kill you if you want to be an entrepreneur. I would get an ulcer in 3 weeks living there all the time, I guess. So you're slimmer if you're a French woman. Are you happier?
Well, I mean, for me, you see, I started my career in the U.S., and so they said that, you know, after 5 years, you can't go back. And when I go for my meetings, I see that it's a totally different way of working. And I'm used to the American way. And, you know, it's a good example to show how different cultures bring different things. The reason I say I could never have done that in France is because, you know, this country is energetic, is dynamic. People have a lot of ideas. They move fast. They're creative. And in France, people are very slow at making decisions. They meet and talk endlessly. They philosophize and they can't make decisions. And for me, that's not my way of thinking anymore. So I would have a hard time working there. And as a woman, I would never have been, you know, my background is linguistics and languages, and I would not have had a place in the business world. All I could have done in France is be, you know, an interpreter or translator or a professor at the university. Whereas in the U.S., you know, if you work hard and you prove yourself, you can do whatever you want. And in that sense, it's an amazing country and a great culture.
Well,
so, you know, you gave us that, and we give you the food and the lifestyle. So it's an exchange program.
I love it.
Plus, I love the music you have.
Sure. So do we. You've given us a lot to chew on. We will chew slowly, and we'll balance off tomorrow. Marie Giuliano, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Marie Giuliano, author of the best-selling French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on Forums. This is On Point. Il me dit des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur, une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
The United States has no intention to attack or invade North Korea. The North Koreans have been told that they can have security assurances on a multilateral basis if they are prepared to take a definitive decision to dismantle their nuclear weapons programs and to do so in a way that is verifiable.
What we declare today, this represents implementation of the first point in the roadmap which the quartet has established.
To our neighbors, Palestinians, I want to promise that we have a real intention to honor your right to live independently and with honor.
I would call it a disciplined budget. My budget reduces spending on non-security discretionary programs by 1%, the most disciplined proposal since Ronald Reagan was in office.
This budget increases defense by $19 billion. It increases international affairs. It increases homeland security. But instead of paying for these increases, merited as they may be, instead of paying for them, it still calls for substantial tax cuts, notwithstanding the fact that we have huge gaping deficits.
If states do not require some valid form of U.S. government-issued ID to get a driver's license, any person could walk in off the street and claim to be an illegal alien in search of a license and be granted one.
Through her leadership and vision, HP has laid a solid foundation for success in the marketplace. We thank Carly for her contributions over the past 6 years as we look forward to accelerating execution of the company's strategy.
I'm delighted for the Prince of Wales and Camilla Parker Bowles. It's very happy news, and when the Cabinet heard it this morning, they sent congratulations and good wishes on behalf of the whole government.
And there's a week North Korea says it has nuclear weapons and pulls out of multilateral negotiations demanding one-on-one talks with the United States. Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas declare a break with Mideast violence. President Bush unveils his $2.58 trillion budget. It comes under immediate attack from Democrats, including South Carolina Congressman John Spratt, ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee. The House passes a tough new set of immigration reforms. One of the country's top female business leaders, Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina, is forced out of her job, and England's heir to the throne, Prince Charles, announces he will marry longtime love Camilla Parker Bowles. I know that has you all a flutter, Jack, that last item.
Yeah, that one really. what can one say?
Well, hey, well, it'll use some newsprint up. That's for sure.
That is for sure. Yards of it. Well, you know, we got the president's budget this week, and it reminded me of something. Philip Roth, some years ago, I think, thinking about the Nixon administration, which he did satirize in a wonderful book called Our Gang. He said that American public life was passing beyond satire. It was so extreme that it was satirizing itself. And that therefore satire couldn't, reality was the satire. Hmm. And I thought of that reading today in Paul Krugman's column in the New York Times about the Bush budget. It seems that the budget, the same budget that calls for cutting food stamps for several hundred thousand children, has tax breaks going into new ones for 2006, totaling $19,000 for several hundred thousand millionaires. You can't satirize that. That is its own statement.
You don't think that'll trickle down in fresh food stamps or better jobs or something, Jack?
I think we've been
around that track, haven't we?
Yeah, we've been around
20 years ago now.
right.
Yeah. Well, it's a big number, and the president doesn't say it'll lead to a balanced budget, just it'll cut the deficit in half by the end of his term, and that's disputed.
That really is disputed. I mean, and of course, he leaves the major spending items, the Iraq War, Social Security, Medicare, off budget. So it's the numbers are not credible on their own terms. And then when you start to look at the things he wants to cut, the National Institute of Health, science budgets, education spending, environmental protection spending, is this really what we want?
And yet still a lot of mysteries out there. Democrats say, let's not cut those taxes. But I haven't heard anybody describe a scenario that fills in that gaping hole, Republican or Democrat.
Oh, that's absolutely right. No one wants to talk about the real tough choices that have to be made, that we have to, we've got to stop this tax cut stuff, and we do have to cut the rate of growth of a lot of programs. All this talk about future generations, this debt, all of this, the war, all this deficit spending, our kids are going to have to pay for it. We're putting it all on them.
It's theirs. Meanwhile, much more immediately, North Korea talking about nuclear weapons. And everybody says nobody wants to go to war. And yet, if you listen to what we heard Condoleezza Rice saying there just now, this is kind of sword tips conversation going on here.
It is. And I think future historians are going to, because we don't know where this will come out. But some of its outcomes could be very dire indeed. The state falling apart, mass refugees, possibly a renewal of the Korean War, possibly passing of nuclear material to terrorists. We don't know where it's going to end. But historians are going to go back to Bush's preemptive doctrine. They're going to go back to the speech, the axis of evil. And they're going to say, Mr. Bush, when you came into office, the North Korean problem was in abeyance. Mr. Clinton had put that beyond their inspectors there. Then you announced these doctrines, and then you invaded Iraq, and North Korea rearmed to protect itself.
Well, that'll be a tough judgment if that's the way it comes out. Of course, who knows exactly what lies under, what was under those many mountains in North Korea. The porcupine defense, we've heard it described, that they've got there, and now a nuclear-tipped porcupine defense, we are told.
It is, and I gather you must have been up there and seen that DMZ.
It's the tension you can cut with a knife, always have been able to, and we're reminded still no formal peace with North Korea after all these years.
That's absolutely right.
Just a ceasefire. We'll be watching. Jack, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Listeners, you have a great weekend, too. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio. Support for On